commercial, the amount of lighting that they're adding to them these days, in my personal opinion, is offensive. I don't know how you guys feel about it. What do you think of that, Shauna?
I do, and you know, some ordinances actually deal with lighting standards.
When you look that up, what did it say?
The SALDO, and then they copied them into the zoning.
So, a different way of dealing with.
So, the use of the water and the power, the noise, the lighting, the setbacks seem to be a big issue, and the height.
I don't know how we would even deal with a 100-foot tall building around here.
That's why.
What are they asking for in Archibald?
60.
Is that reasonable up there?
Yeah, they have a 60-foot max in your ordinance.
Well, we have a 50.
I don't know who's going to respond to the fire because Archibald doesn't have a ladder truck that reaches 60 feet. It'd be Jessup and Peckville and Durham that'll be responding.
Well, and are the local fire departments even capable of addressing a fire in that magnitude? I mean, what will they do? Will they establish a perimeter and watch it burn?
Let it burn.
How would you? I mean, the amount of chemicals and things that are in that building, the pouring water on that and watching it run down, having it run off into the local streams.
I think they need to have.
It would be a kind of contamination issue for sure.
Well, the other thing that was brought up in these days, they have to have true emergency response documents.
Yeah, and that's always hard because there's all these, I'll call them canned emergency management evacuation reports, things of that nature. But the weird thing about these data centers is there's not a lot of people in there.
That doesn't mean that it isn't going to affect the community or the surroundings of where they are.
Oh, no, there's not a lot of people in there, which makes it actually worse because...
That's what I was
going to say. You don't know when the fire starts.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So I think that we have to have a list of mandatory tests and studies. There has to be a mandatory water quality, water use study. There has to be
Environmental impact. Environmental impact.
Not there could be at the discretion of, if it comes into this, these studies must be done. Mm-hmm. None of this maybe, how could we?
Including emergency response, everything right up front.
Yeah, put it all. Now I don't know how you would do that.
I mean, I've seen the glare
the risk
studies
assessment
and the noise studies that have been presented for solar arrays, the solar farms. I wouldn't think that they're any different than that. So there are people out there that actually do this, and I've seen.
But then we have to put minimum standards on what they can produce. So we need a professional to tell us what do they have to have. You know, it's like the gas stations. Not what do they want to do to make it look like daylight so that they can wake people up. What do they have to have to provide adequate safety
protection? Yeah.
That's all that they should be allowed to use, in my opinion. And this should be the same.
Yeah. And all the data that they have to produce up front has to transfer right over to every accessory use, too.
Well, they have to do an assessment of the entire project.
Yeah, the whole project, so.
And say everything that they're going to use.
And it has to, yeah, but it has to be listed in there, what the assessment is showing for.
Right, and I think upfront, they have to show not just, I know they don't like to do this at the conditional use stage, but I think there's got to be a plot plan that not only shows the buffers from non-residential and residential, but also shows the landscaping, the lighting, the traffic flow.
Traffic study, that's another.
The location of all these accessory sites and how they're going to protect the public.
Well, like you said, there's a minimal amount of employees, yep. And there's not a lot of shipping and receiving, I'm sure. You know, all there's, so traffic study is the most adverse effect of that type of project is going to be during construction.
Yeah.
The onus needs to be on the developers, because you know as well as I do, as long as we've been around this, they've switched this from land development first so you could understand what they were doing, to conditional use first so that they don't have to spend any engineering money. And I think we have to take a shift and not care what money they spend coming in.
I agree with that 100%.
You have to be careful, because you've got to do it so that you don't lose in court. And that's the key. The key is that if the conditional use requires that you meet certain minimums, that you meet those minimums. And that's why, you know, the glare, the lighting, the electrical, all those things are things that we've dealt with before in other types of high intensity development. So, I mean, there should be enough standards out there to pick and choose from and put them in a conditional use application requirement, so that when they read the ordinance, they'll know that in addition to the normal requirements, that all of these requirements apply to that particular use.
And we have to stop. We have to stop worrying about affecting the small applicant, because we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Exactly.
We're so concerned.
To a degree, I'm not going to argue that.
Huh?
To a degree, I'll still argue that. But
well, I can and I can defend you and help you with that argument, but in practical sense, it's not working for us. It's not working. It's working against us.
In what way?
We're not able to apply reasonable standards to these bigger outfits and still give relief to the smaller applicant. It's not working.
It's possible, though. It's not working when certain people want certain things, and we're forgetting what a conditional use is about. The small people come in for a conditional use. That's where we set the conditions on whatever they have in stock, whatever needs to be done. The bigger ones, I'm still going to stick to my guns on it. If it needs an NPDS permit or a disturbance is an acre or more, you need to do everything.
Right. Yeah, I thought we handled that with the size of.
I'm not for one minute going to affect the small guys. You get somebody that wants to go in and rent a store that's already open and they got to go through all this bullshit.
Right, but we're talking about anybody that's doing land development. Pretty much anybody that's doing land development.
And again, somebody wants to put up a little knick-knack store, they're going to have to go through all this? There's limitations.
If you're putting them into a conditional use.
Yeah, I think the real issue is the way the system is currently handling these things, is geared toward large commercial developments.
That's the problem.
And
the problem.
So the only other thing that you can do from a zoning standpoint would be to make everything else a principal permitted use, as long as it complies with the standards. But then you give up your right to
set conditions.
Conditions.
Well, and this is why I'm against all this crap with the conditional use versus the land development. If we can't set conditions at the conditional use based on the land development, what good is it? Then let's have land development conditions.
Well, but we can't. The law isn't allowing us to do that. I understand the argument. I feel the same way you do, but we have to find a reasonable way through this.
Yeah. And the MPC does not help, because the MPC says that if there's any ambiguity in the ordinance, it goes in favor of the applicant.
Simple. A done deal.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that's the real issue. And that's why it's so hard to try to do that balancing act between helping out somebody who only needs really a change in use approval. And maybe that's what you do. Maybe you start calling these things, if it was a store and it's still going to be a retail store, it's a change in use. We
never did that. We never brought them in. If the same exact use was being transferred, we didn't bring them back in for a conditional use.
Yeah, I know.
Example's the cookie company. They're doing the same exact thing that all the built businesses that were there before them did.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to come in for a conditional use. They were asked if they would come in, and they did. But they didn't have to.
Yeah, I think that's the problem right now in zoning, is that we're so busy trying to react and deal with the large type of developments that we're restricting ourselves to all these standards and all these tests, and the poor little guy can't do anything about it.
No. So let's put them all out of business.
Well, there's got to be middle ground. There's got to be middle ground somewhere.
We'll do the same thing Scamdami's doing.
Oh. Well, now, how many businesses, small businesses that have been doing changes and have been coming to the township and they're doing anything, have been affected at all? We haven't seen any here.
No, I don't think there have been.
So how much do we need to be concerned about that? I'm not sure. Are we wasting our time on something that isn't happening? I know that the rest of these things are happening. So do the data centers and if we're going to require these tests, shouldn't these same tests be applied to warehouse facilities, to the ordinance that we're putting in right now?
And that's
now
where I think you need to have...
If you're going to do a warehouse facility, then you need to do a water study. You need to do an environmental study.
I think the way to word it is to separate it in the ordinance and have a definition of data center, and then have a separate, specific section of the ordinance that deals with data centers and the conditional... And under that section, have, in addition to the regular conditional use application, you must apply A, B, C, and D at the time of the conditional use application so that we can review this in a reasonable manner. Because that's what I'm seeing in the newer ordinances. I'm seeing it broken down into, hey, we defined the data center, but then we have a separate section, like 501 through 505, are all for data centers and all the requirements. And then solar power is a separate section. And warehousing would be another separate section. So there are definitions, and then there's specific requirements under the section that's entitled under the use. That's what I'm seeing in most new ordinances.
And that separates the mom and pops.
That's what separates the mom and pops.
Well, so then that's so.
Because mom and pop just have to deal with whatever's in that, in our ordinance, I think it's 608.1, the conditional use section.
Yeah.
and the data centers are going to have to deal
with it. So then how do you put a catch-all clause in that when something comes up that we weren't expecting? Do you use the 1 acre NPDES permit level? Yeah. Do you use...
Well, I'm going to tell you, there are things that are going to come up. Because even I'm on my fifth solar farm application, and from the first one to the fifth one, we've learned an awful lot. and we've had to make, you know, some changes in the ordinance. But they were changes that most of the developers agreed to. And that's the other thing about doing this, is that once you get a developer in with an application, the next guy that comes in knows that other developer's been there and knows that the township now understands the process. So they're more prone to give you stuff, unlike Van Leeuwenhoek's client that didn't want to give us anything. They're more prone to give you the information you're looking for right at the outset of the application.
So, what are we getting from this?
So I'm getting, before we were doing warehouse ordinance and including data centers. Now I think we're doing a data center ordinance separate from warehouse.
I cannot recommend in good conscience, because I know that's how they're getting the one up in Covington. If you include data center in a warehouse, you're subjecting yourself to potential smaller data centers and old warehouses or old large buildings that might already be in existence. And that's what's happening in other places.
All right, so by separating them, you're separating
right,
the two.
Right, because there's a lot of empty warehouses down in Pittston and Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And
well, they have a whole pile of brand new warehouses that aren't...
that are empty.
Yeah, distribution centers, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that one on 33 that they that big one they built 2 years ago. I haven't seen anything ever parked there.
Yeah, but the problem there is the power. They don't have distribution lines close, right?
Oh, I think they do.
Yeah.
I think they do right there. Down by that new exit in Pleasant Valley.
The Susquehanna line goes right through Pleasant Valley. And
yeah, they put that whole new exit in at...
Tatami or whatever that is,
yeah. And that's where they put all those warehouses in. There's one, the biggest one, actually. I have never seen a truck park there.
That's the issue with Archbold. The issue with Archbold is that they got the high intensity power lines going right through the middle of town.
Well, in a generation.
Well, as you say, you got a generator. Those three huge generators right there too.
Yeah.
So, and a pipeline to build another one if they need it, right?
Exactly.
So.
Oh yeah, they've got the fuel to run it.
Right. So.
So I think we should be looking in a direction of.
Are we running out of time on that? On this?
Yeah, June 5th is our last date, which I'm going to talk to the supervisors next week about. I have some ideas on how to maybe extend that date.
Well, I think
the more information that comes out, what's our set of disadvantage?
Well, we have an ordinance that we're getting relatively comfortable with the exception that we're not requiring these tests.
Right.
And I think that we need to require these tests.
Tests and studies,
and a clear emergency response. There's another term for it.
But, yeah.
What do we do for fire suppression? I mean,
I don't think just fire suppression. I think how is it affecting the community?
What say do we have in it with the National Building Code?
Well, we don't. And that's what I don't understand, because if these things are 60 feet or higher, then there's more than one story in it.
But can we stick to our 45 foot or say 50 foot limit? Yeah.
Well, even at 45 feet, you would assume that it's not stacked from floor to ceiling.
Yeah, but if it's 45 feet tall or 50 feet tall or whatever, and 300 feet across, mm-hmm. We don't have any apparatus around here.
No.
That's gonna fight that fire if it's in the center. If it's 500,000 square feet and it, or more from what I'm understanding, what kind of dimensions are you really talking about?
Yeah, they need to. So.
I think
just from that standpoint, if there ever was a catastrophic failure and there was a fire, literally. We don't have any equipment around. I mean, I'm not speaking for trying to speak for the fire department, but I don't think any of our fire departments can.
That's what I'm saying. What do? We establish a perimeter and watch it burn.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I'm leading to is there's no way to fight
it.
So
how long is it going to burn and what is it going to put out?
Well, a Tesla burns for 8 hours. A Tesla.
One car.
One battery.
One car, one battery will burn for...
Yeah, and it's like 2,300 degrees or something like that.
I've actually seen people
try to
burn hard drives, and the hard drive of a computer will burn forever. Poor Cosa.
Well, yeah, the hard drive of the computer actually has a lithium-ion battery in it anyway.
Yeah.
How does it keep all right. The hard drive is live itself.
Yeah.
It has to have energy to keep its sustainability.
Yeah.
So there's a battery in it.
Yeah, and
what's the environmental impact to that?
I'm sorry, what?
What's the environmental impact to that?
Oh, that. I wouldn't set it on fire on dirt for sure. I mean, all kinds of crap's gonna be melting. I mean,
yeah, you have your spacesuit on.
I was going to say, you'd be turning green like Marvin the Martian. You could tell me that, and I would believe you. I wouldn't know. I know it can't be good. It certainly ain't good for it.
So then the and they have to be clear about a listing of their accessory uses.
Yes, because there's the cooling, there's the... on-site electrical, there's the generators in the event of power outages, there's all these different types of things.
Well, I think you should list out what are the standard accessory uses and a study is required for each. And then there needs to be a sentence that if there are other accessory uses that require a study.
They have to let us know how many tens of
Tony's
thousands.
Tony's grimacing here.
How many tens of thousand gallons of fuel they're going to store on site? You know, some of these generators that like Turkey Hill had, that burned 40 gallons a day when they had that big trailer generator out there. That was 40 gallons a day.
Roman was saying they had 3,500 gallon tanks under the generator to run the generator each day.
Yeah, but how long does that last? What is the refill rate? Restore rate?
Oh, yeah.
So like if let's say that's burning 40, let's say that size generator was burning 40 gallons a day. It's not on. I wouldn't think that a generator, one of the generators that size could be 40 gallons an hour.
So did they?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Did they appeal this application right away because they don't want to get into the money to do these kind of studies?
They did. They appealed it immediately.
But is that to avoid any of this stuff that would come along?
It would. Okay. Yes.
So. The other thing that confuses me that I besides the special exception is truly explain to me the reason for how you lay it out and how we understand overlay zones. What makes them legal? What makes one? Please make me understand that so that.
Okay. The example that can best be used to talk about overlays is actually one that exists to a certain extent in a couple of the townships in Pike County. And that, for example, Lackawaxen has what they call the Lackawaxen River Overlay Zone. And what they did is, in or near the stream bed and surrounding area, they basically curtailed development for 150 feet. Beyond that, you can do development as a conditional use. They call it the Lackawanna River Overlay Zone, and that's a prohibitory one. In your ordinance, you have what is called Section 426, and that is the water protection zone, I'm going to call it. When you look at that, that's really an overlay. Even though it's not called that, it's an overlay. It sets forth within a 200 feet of a well, 1,000 feet of a community system. And basically you're saying in that zone, these types of developments can only be done under these conditions and with these standards. So you actually have one now that we're not referring to it as the overlay, but it really is an overlay zone. And that's why the zoning map shows it the way it does.
But you do an overlay zone for specific uses?
Areas that you want to protect from development or for specific uses. A good example of an overlay zone for uses is what they did up in South Canaan Township and Waymark Borough. When they came in with the windmills, they made that an overlay zone. The three municipalities got together and said, okay, if you want to do wind power generation, you can only do it right here on this mountain, and that's it. No other windmills are allowed in the three townships. And so that's an example of an overlay zone that basically allows a certain type of development in a certain area.
But it doesn't prohibit it.
Purposes of keeping it away from the general population.
But it doesn't prohibit it, prohibit any other use?
No.
Okay, so can you make the overlay zone for this type of a commercial use in a residential area or in another use area? It's not.
No, it wouldn't be practical to encourage developers to have this in this type of use in near a residential area. So the DD district is really the place where this type of use is going to be.
Well, what about the conservation district? What about the open area?
Yeah, the conservation district, because of the spirit and intent of that was, you know, for conservation of natural resources, I think that applies.
That was to deter development at all.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. Now, I will say that most of the parcels that are large enough for this type of use are probably now in the conservation zone. There aren't a lot of parcels that are more than 50 acres in the DD zone that aren't part of either a clean and green or a conservation zone. And I don't see people, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm misreading this, but I don't see a lot of people who have their property in clean and green taking it out and selling it for